Hello and welcome to Geek and Review Podcast. I'm Jeremy Pappas. Alongside, as always, he's faster than a speeding bullet. He's Russell Jones. Russell.
It took me about 3 years in college before I realized exactly what kind of an insult that was.
Yeah, I didn't mean like physically speed.
I know.
Because you're rather slothful. I've played racquetball against you.
I am left-handed, however, and that's true. In my face.
You do use the devil's hand. which actually isn't the devil's hand. It's just the people that are on the right hand of God are good, and the people that are on the left hand of God aren't. Which has always made left-handers a little like feel out in the cold. But
well, it's like in Spanish, and I think from the Latin root, sinistra is left, and sinister is the root in there. So
right.
Yeah.
So I don't know what that tells you. I know you're not sinister.
Well, they do refer to me. Well, Mr. Sinister is not one of my nicknames, no.
Not yet.
But we would like to see Mr. Sinister at some point.
We would.
Because honestly, as far as villains go for Marvel movies, he would be way up
there. I like a Mr. Sinister. I think it's about time we got a Marvel movie that had a really high ticket, well-known villain in. I mean, I know we're getting Ultron here pretty soon, but you know, the last couple have been a little kind of step away Rogues Gallery wise.
Well, especially with the X-Men, because Sinister is very tied with the X-Men.
Right.
Magneto has been kind of the big guy for the longest time, but Magneto is also he's done two ways. He is either a very humanized character, which he would hate because he's so pro-mutant and so anti-human, or he's portrayed the way that is more accurate as to why he's such a villain, in that he's a purist terrorist who went through the worst that humanity had to offer and said, you know what, just cleanse the gene pool.
Yeah, I mean, and, you get
and
to
just,
a point.
I mean, there are points he will straight up just slit people's throats out of nowhere in mass numbers. There's so many things about Magneto that could make him a better villain, but for the movies, you get him, you know, humanized.
Right.
And that happens. Sinister, no redeeming values.
No.
None whatsoever. Apocalypse.
Yeah, no, he's like a step away from Azrael. I mean, he's just a demon.
Yeah.
You know, he's just a bad guy. Though you say that about Magneto, I just finished watching a documentary called Blackfish, which a lot of people have talked about. It's about SeaWorld. Well, it shows you, it does a really good job of going through how the orcas are taken to SeaWorld and things like that, and the mistreatment, and especially the individual orca that has caused so many of these injuries, an orca called Tilikum. And at the end of the movie, I'm sitting there, and the only thing I can think of, after having seen all the stuff that, I mean, they talk about orcas that give birth, and then the young is sent to another park. And orca society is very family oriented, and SeaWorld tells you, "Oh, well, this is their family," but it's not. They're different orcas. That's not their family. It's like if you took random people from nations that didn't speak the same language and threw them in a room together and said, "Hey, now you're family." And then they like fight each other because they're not. That's not part of their pod. It's not their family. But there are stories of orca mothers like crying for days and making noises that they never heard made before. And at the end of the movie, the only thing I could think of was, "Yeah, I'd kill a trainer too. I'd kill a couple. I'd stop eating the fish they gave me and subsist entirely on a diet of SeaWorld trainers until they let my ass go." I told her I'd just eat trainers all day. Go.
Here's the interesting thing.
Send me that one. She looks tasty.
Here's the interesting thing about Mr. Sinister. Doesn't really have. I mean, his powers are kind of the semi broken. We're gonna give him the handful of powers that will make him a badass supervillain and allow us to continue to keep him around. Mm-hmm. Like he can regenerate. He can shapeshift.
He's like a D&D 3rd edition vampire.
Yeah, basically.
you only kill him if the GM wants you to kill him.
Right.
Otherwise, he'll get away.
In the Ultimate Universe, when they did the Ultimate X-Men series, they reimagined him from, you know, the white-skinned, blue-armored, vampire-looking figure into an actual person. A tattooed street thug named Nathaniel Essex. Mm-hmm. And he was this, like, schizophrenic, self-experimenting, he used to work for Oscorp, actually. And he got to the point where he was, believed he was killing people in ritual fashion to bring about the orders of Lord Apocalypse. And he later became Apocalypse in the Ultimate Universe. But it's always, you know, changing him to a tattooed street thug was just a, it seemed like a really, really weird decision to take with his character. Not like we could see anyone else do that anytime soon, right?
Which brings us to our first real topic. If it seems like we sort of jumped right into this, it actually is. I started this while we were both ranting about something we had just recently read. We hinted this on the last podcast, and we're going to go into it full bore. Batman versus Superman, we're continuing to get more individuals named as part of the cast. Now, we, to our credit, when it came out that Affleck was going to be Batman, I was cool with it. I was totally cool with it, still cool with it. Russell, I believe you were also relatively cool with it. Didn't freak
out.
I'm not
super anti-Batfleck. I'll make the jokes the same as everyone else.
Right.
But more, I don't think it's because Ben Affleck would make a bad Batman. I think that this Ben Affleck in this Batman, in this movie, I think is going to be kind of crappy. But, you know,
it's been a while since we've talked about Batman versus Superman, but we left it essentially that the movie is going to be terrible and Ben Affleck's going to have very little to do with that. Now, they've also recently come out with who is going to play Wonder Woman, because Wonder Woman will be in this movie, which I kind of dislike only because I want Wonder Woman to have her own movie, and I don't think she really fits here.
She deserves her own goddamn movie. But she deserves to be in the fucking title. She's one of the big three of the universe.
She is going to be played by an actress named Gal Gadot from The Fast and the Furious. I don't like this casting because, to me, she doesn't look Wonder Woman-esque. She's very Kate Moss, runway model-esque, which is cool. It's fine. She's a very attractive, very beautiful woman. However, I would have preferred to see a little more Amazonian, a little less Kate Moss. Just me. Not a huge fan. Not a big deal.
And in the Fast and Furious movies, she's also been cast to be this, you know, eye candy. She's also Israeli. She has Israeli army training. She's doing a ton of martial arts.
I've never seen the Fast and the Furious movies because I like good movies and not Fast and the Furious movies. So I haven't seen Fast Five or Tokyo Wind or whatever they're called. All I know is I've seen pictures of her and she looks like a runway model to me. And to me, that's not what I picture an Amazonian Diana Prince being looking like. But again, I'm not downing it at all, not where I would have gone, but I feel sort of the same way, maybe a step back from where I feel with Affleck. I think Affleck can do a good job as Batman. I'm sure she'll be fine as Wonder Woman, but not the way that I would have seen her cast. The thing that really pissed a lot of people off was that we also learned after that they've cast Jesse Eisenberg, who was in Zombieland, and he played Zuckerberg in The Social Network, as Lex Luthor. Now, not a good idea, because I understand the Lex Luthor thing. Lex is, we have the picture of him in our mind. I would say of all superhero villains, Luthor has that look that everyone knows.
He's very, very solidly defined.
Right, he's very solidly defined, which...
And he keeps that definition across many different things.
I think the moment that somebody... I think if somebody tried to put hair on Lex Luthor, the world would just go crazy.
Yeah. Well, during the time of Death of Superman, Reign of the Supermen, in the comics, Lex actually was dead. He had died because of kryptonite poisoning from the ring on his hand. And he had been replaced by Lex Jr., supposedly a lost, like, bastard son or something from I think Scotland or Ireland. Bright red hair. This big mane of red hair.
Which Luthor, in his origins in Action Comics, he did have hair, and he did have red hair. Yeah. So it's kind of a throwback.
Didn't Gene Hackman have hair when he played him?
In the Superman movie?
Yeah, I think so.
No, I believe Hackman was bald.
You know what? We're just going to have to check that because I
I
swear.
Believe Hackman was bald.
Nope.
Though,
nope.
Hackman.
Black, kind of, you know, brown brunette, kind of curly looking.
But he lost his hair during the movie.
Yes, he did.
Gotcha.
But,
so we were both.
Yeah, he started off with, you know, kind of a pompadour. So,
right,
yeah,
right,
yeah.
Right, right, right. I'm
but,
with.
But still, you have a very solid image, not just
you do.
Of, you know, bald. That's
right.
One of the things that they tend to stick with the most, but also just of the kind of
right.
character that looks
like. I mean, look, just look at the characters that have played Luthor. I mean, you have, first, you mentioned Gene Hackman.
Yeah.
He was also played by Michael Rosenbaum.
Yes.
Also played him on, I want to say Smallville. Was it Smallville?
Rosenbaum also does the voice of the Flash a lot.
But you get these very, you know, strong chin, kind of business corporate style characters. Now, I don't bring that up to say that that is the way it should be done, but that is the way it is most often portrayed. Now, here's the thing that came out not too long ago, so this may be rumor and innuendo, this actually came out today, that I think really, because people were pissed when this happened 2 weeks ago. We've been kind of in limbo with podcasts and hadn't gotten a chance to get to it. We've had other stuff to talk about. This happened a couple of weeks ago, and so the fervor has really died down now. People said, Jesse Eisenberg as Lex Luthor, what the fuck are you thinking? What the fuck is going on? What?
It's Lex Luthor, the Social Network. It's the internet,
right.
You know, it's the internet startup billionaire genius being the stand-in for the former wealthy industrialist type
right.
kind of guy that Luthor was. And to a point, you can see, okay, I can understand how you might go there when you want to do a modern update of, you know, why he is who he is.
Well, here's
there
what
are other
we
problems
find out
with
today.
That, but
here's
yes,
what we
yes.
find out today. According to, I'm looking at this, I'll put it in the podcast page, you can take a look at it yourself. This is being reported by Inquisitor.com, and they are referencing, I don't
they
even
They reference
know.
IGN, and IGN, if you really want to go all the way down the rabbit hole, who do we think is usually at the root of most of this stuff?
It's not Latino Review.
It is!
This is a Latino Review? Oh, damn it, Latino Review! Well, now I don't know what to think. Damn it.
But it's our favorite, nerd rage genesis point.
They're such good trolls. Such good trolls.
Yeah.
Well, this is the rumor. Now I don't believe it. I was starting to believe it. This is the rumor as reported by Inquisitor.com. And I'd look to see if this was fucking Latino Review. That makes me mad.
Yeah.
Lex Luthor is reportedly being reimagined as a tattooed skinhead street punk. What?
Yep.
What?
Yep. So, if you dig it all the way back, Latino Review claims that he is a street punk that came up, you know, as a genius, essentially, a tech whiz, who became a self-made billionaire at the age of 18 and becomes the CEO of LexCorp. Supposedly, he'll be really big into tattoos and has a sleeve of the Metropolis skyline down one arm. At age of 14,
skyline down your arm.
At the age of 14, Lex was on the streets. Wasn't long before he was initiated into a street gang and took over as their boss within a year. So it's supposed to show that he has a lot of, you know, that steely resolve behind the genius. He's not just, you know, a genius. This, if you had told me a week or two ago that Jesse Eisenberg being cast as Lex Luthor was not going to be the thing that ticked me off the most, I would have called you a filthy liar. This, if it is true, not even if it is true, if it's actually like the working starting place for them, just, I'm calling it now, Flopsville.
Yeah, it's not going to do well.
Now, Lone Ranger Flopsville.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's
yeah.
what we're talking about here. Because there's kind of a disconnect sometimes whenever we come to talking about the people that make movies and the people that consume movies. And the people that talk about, you know, consuming movies, we're thinking, okay, we want these things, we like this, these are things we like. The people who make the movies, a lot of times they are completely removed from all that. and they make decisions that seem absolutely completely unfounded, saying really stupid, impossibly stupid things like, well, Wonder Woman's just too complicated a character to give her her own film. So instead, we're going to take a person and a character who has been known for being, like, you know, the absolute moral center of the DC universe. We're going to have him straight up murder someone, which he doesn't do, which is not part of his central character, but that's going to happen. Then we're going to pair him, you know, with Batman, because we're going to be making our tentpole movie sooner or later. You kind of got to give that.
Right.
Then we're going to throw as the villain of, you know, the actual nemesis of Superman, instead of taking this extremely iron-willed, will-do-absolutely-anything, super-ruthless genius, who is also arguably the strongest pro-human person on the planet. Because Lex's entire motivation for taking out Superman is not necessarily to get power for himself. But when you really drill down, the reason why he doesn't like him is because he ain't from around here.
Right.
He is pro-human achievement. And by human achievement, most of the time that turns into Lex Luthor achievement, because the only way humanity is going to get somewhere is if he's the one that's leading them.
Lex Luthor likes a good dick measuring contest, and he doesn't like it that Superman would probably beat him, so he likes even in the odds. And if even in the odds means getting rid of Superman and his dick entirely, then that's what Lex Luthor will do, which is a great trait for a character to have. He doesn't like Superman because Superman is different, and he always tries to come up to the bar that Superman has set and surpass it to show people that, hey, look, I'm just a human just like you, and I can best Superman.
Right.
That's Luthor in a nutshell.
Yeah.
The thing is, Luthor is a multi-billionaire. He has the ability to do this. If you make him, even if you make him a kingpin-like figure, which I realize mixes my companies, but stay with me.
Yeah.
Even if you make him a kingpin-like figure, it's harder for that to happen. Because the kingpin, I mean, he is Luthor-like, in a sense. He's a much simpler character. He's basically just a bad guy who likes money. But he's not, he can't react to people. Luthor likes to gloat. He likes to be that guy. And making him into this sort of other guy, I don't think it doesn't fill the same role that Lex Luthor as a character fits in the Superman mythology.
In a way, it kind of makes him less, because this is why he's a ruthless criminal because he came from the streets and, you know, this is how he grew up. Whereas the original, you know, the actual Lex Luthor that we all know about typically is just flat out ruthless because that's who he is. He strives for the pinnacle of human achievement and he sees himself as the leading tip of the spear for human achievement. He's going to kill this Kryptonian. He's going to get rid of this Kryptonian because humanity needs to stand on their necks.
Right. He doesn't trust Superman.
Never.
Ever.
Never, 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 never.
Which is why I think that also, because, I mean, let's call a spade a spade. This story from Latino Review, had I known it was from Latino Review to begin with, I probably wouldn't have brought it up as forcefully. And I looked, it looks like it was being sourced somewhere else, so I kind of regret that. Because again, this Latino Review, and if you go to look at their site, it has a lot more information about the movie than exists, I would say. So they're clearly just making this up. And again, these are things that we've seen going forward. I like that we sort of discovered Latino Review randomly, and now it's become a thing. I don't like it, 'cause that's become a thing. But it's sort of become a thing. Like, the first thing that I think we saw from Latino Review was Doctor Strange stuff. And they've, regardless, it's the people from Latino Review. So you know what you're getting. But, I think that, to me, cuts to the heart of the Jesse Eisenberg is really a strange choice for Lex Luthor, because Eisenberg can't play like an older guy. And to me, Luthor needs to be an accomplished older guy. He can't be like I don't see him as like a young gun kind of, venture capitalist, sort of upstart,
There's two different pictures here. One of them is a guy in a dark room sitting down looking at a bunch of TV or computer monitors and just, really a spider in the center of a web. The other is someone, and I think I described this before elsewhere, but standing at the top of a penthouse office looking down through glass windows at the city below and just scheming and plotting, just over everyone else. The former is much more Lex Luthor than the latter.
I wouldn't even take it down that far. I think you could do a good Lex Luthor either way. He just doesn't have he just doesn't have that character. Here's why I think that this is going to be detrimental to the movie as a whole. Well, A, the movie, as we've said before, it's gonna let's rephrase something that we said before. This movie is not going to be good, and it's not going to be Ben Affleck's fault. To be fair, it's probably not going to be Jesse Eisenberg's fault either, but he's going to help. He's going to assist. And it's weird to me that they would continually make these decisions that people then hear and they react to and get really bad press, and then they wait and then they bring out another one. It seems like everyone that they've announced to be a character in Batman versus Superman has just been, oh, this is gonna play this person, and then just a chorus of boos. And this is gonna play this person, another chorus of boos. It's fun. It's kind of weird. Is it just me, or is it just kind of weird? I mean,
Well, this is like I'm t this is what I'm talking about, the disconnect between the people that make the movies and the people that consume the movies.
right.
Because the ultimate defense against that is you haven't seen it. And to a point, that defense is going to exist and it is going to hold up because
Right,
Heath Ledger is the Joker. Heath Ledger was, a high
right.
school heartthrob, and then he's playing the Joker. But at this point, you're so far removed, not only from source material, but from the basic ideas and
See,
concepts.
that's where I'm at with this whole Eisenberg as Luthor thing. I don't think it's bad as a I don't necessarily think it's bad because oh he can possibly be Lex Luthor. I think it shows a disconnect of concepts in the universe. I already understand sort of what they're doing and why I'm not giving any credence to Latino Review because I'm sure some dude just got drunk and made that up. But I could see them actually doing that if only to try to make Lex Luthor more of a Joker character. Because as we've seen, what DC will attempt to do is recreate what has worked in the past. They kind of struck gold with the Nolan Batman films. Now Nolan's not making any more Batman films. So I think they're going to try to capture that lightning in the bottle again. Now, are they going to be able to do it? I don't think they understand why that worked well enough to do it again. It's like if I showed you a car and then had you make me a car. It doesn't work that way. You can make something that maybe kind of looks like a car. You could draw what you think the car looks like, but at the end of the day, it's not gonna be a car. It's not gonna be anything near a car. That's what we're gonna get here. We're going to get if even an iota of this Latino Review nonsense bullshit is based in reality, what we're going to get is a caricature of the Joker from The Dark Knight as Lex Luthor, not understanding why that's not going to work. Now, I say this as somebody who I enjoyed The Dark Knight. I didn't love it. I'm not one of those fall over, I wish they were making a fourth Nolan Batman film, because frankly, I don't. I didn't like Batman. I enjoyed Batman Begins, a little less so The Dark Knight, a lot less so Dark Knight Rises. So, I mean, I come from. So don't think I'm a Nolan Batman fanboy by any stretch of the imagination, because I'm not. I didn't genuinely. I wouldn't call myself a fan of those movies even. I liked Michael Keaton's Batman much more than I liked Michael Keaton's Batman and Jack Nicholson's Joker more than I liked the Batman and Joker in the Nolan films. I just did. So I just think it is, it's separated from the aspects of the characters that work. Superman has these certain aspects, which we saw in Man of Steel, even though that was a horrible, terrible fucking movie. And now we're getting what we can kind of see with Luthor and with Batman and with Wonder Woman. And it seems like it's just misstep after misstep after misstep. And you're gonna get a movie that's not what it's supposed, it's not what it's billed. You're getting sold a bill of goods.
When you say Superman, you expect certain things. You just do,
because it's existed. You expect certain aspects of Superman. I could see them doing a Superman movie and making him not a superhero, making him even not an alien, but doing other certain aspects of the film and having me enjoy it. I mean, I could see that sort of movie being enjoyable, but even if you say, well, he is an alien, and he is from Krypton, and he is this, and he is this, and then you give us the Man of Steel that we got before, that just, it was just not good, and he wasn't a very good Superman because they made him Jesus like you don't do with Superman. They literally made him Jesus.
No.
Like, before the movie came out, we talked about the two ways there were to do Superman. You could do Superman as a weird alien, which is good. Or you can do Superman as Jesus, which is bad. And they literally made him Jesus.
Yeah.
They went as far down that road as they could possibly go. Which is the opposite road. You don't want to go down that road. You want to make him a weird alien. Weird alien works. Jesus doesn't work. Because no one wants to watch a movie about Jesus. Except like your aunt.
Listen to the weird and creepy Stephen King Northeast Maine gas station attendant. Don't go down that road.
You don't want to go down that road. You don't.
Don't. Just, ugh. So, I think we're pretty much convinced at this point, depending on the accuracy of Latino Review.
I'm telling you right now, do not believe Latino Review. Again, I would not have put such credence on the Latino Review claims had I known it was Latino Review. I was looking through this thing and it didn't say Latino Review anywhere, and it pushed it back to IGN, and I'm thinking, oh, this maybe have some traction. And we found out it's from fucking Latino Review, so what can you do? Yeah. In fact, I'm going to post the Latino Review thing so you can take a look at it and not the one that I've been looking at. But, you know, don't hate Ben Affleck. Not a super big fan of Gal Gadot as Wonder Woman. And Eisenberg, I think, is a super swing and a miss. I wasn't looking forward to the movie to begin with.
Seriously, we're gonna get to the end of this thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably gonna do this about as well as the Lone Ranger did. And
that's
someone's
what
gonna
I'm thinking.
And someone's gonna come along and say, "What happened?"
Mm-hmm.
And someone's gonna say, "Oh, it was that Wonder Woman." And then I'm gonna have to find someone and kick him in the nuts because seriously,
yeah,
it's the same reason why Bryan Singer thinks that Superman Returns didn't work. Because he made it for women. It's like,
Bryan Singer just made a shitty movie.
Yeah.
He just made a shitty movie. It had nothing to do with making it for women. He just made a shitty movie. I've watched movies that were intended for women and enjoyed them. I've watched movies that were intended for men and not enjoyed them. I saw his piece of shit movie and didn't like it. Bottom line.
It's just when that disconnect sets in, breaking through that disconnect is damn near impossible.
Yeah, but again, that's just Bryan Singer's opinion, and he's only ever done two good things. Which are House and The Usual Suspects. Everything else pretty much sucked. So, there you go.
To continue our trend of discussing things that DC does wrong and Marvel does oh so right, Paul Bettany is the Vision.
Paul Bettany is the Vision, which is cool.
Yep.
I mean,
Paul Bettany.
We've talked repeatedly about Vision. I know that. When it came out that that old Vin Diesel was gonna be a character that we were kind of thinking it might be Vision because he has kind of Vision-esque qualities. He pretty much has no hair and is kind of buff, like you see him in the Jonas portrayal of Vision. But Paul Bettany, I like. You know what I like about Paul Bettany as Vision? He kind of already looks like an alien.
Oh yeah. Very much.
So, and he's got that voice.
Mm.
So, I think I like Paul Bettany as Vision. It's gonna be pretty interesting. We also are getting confirmation that Vision is going to be in Avengers 2, Electric Boogaloo. Yep.
Yes, indeed. Which, the original Vision from the comics, Ultron was created by Hank Pym.
Mm-hmm.
Ultron turns against Hank Pym. Ultron builds the Vision, this right. android, to destroy the Avengers. Mm-hmm. The Vision says, Ultron, you're a dick, and joins the Avengers.
Right.
So you can see already kind of the line this is going to go down.
Mm-hmm.
We think Ultron is going to wind up being built by Iron Man.
Yes, that's what... Either Ultron is going to be have been built by Iron Man, or Ultron is going to be built by Jarvis.
Right.
Or be and some weird aspect yeah. of Jarvis.
It's entirely possible that maybe you wind up getting, you know, Ultron being built and the Vision being built at the same time, mm-hmm. and just the Ultron is the one that, you know, is the bad egg.
Right.
And Jarvis is, you know, right. morphs into the Vision. Either way,
which could be cool.
You wind up getting Jarvis turning into the Vision, which is a great way to continue the Iron Man thread without mm-hmm. necessarily having to make another Iron Man.
Right, and we have been looking at Vision as being in the Avengers 2 for a while because they brought in Wanda and Pietro, and when you bring in Wanda and you bring in Ultron, the link to them is Vision because yep. Ultron created Vision. Vision got freaky with Wanda and created the twins Tom and Will later on down the line, like way later down the line.
Did not know that.
Spoiler alert. Yeah. They were married.
Interesting thing, according to Total Numbers, Bettany has appeared in films that have earned nearly $6 billion in total cumulative box office.
Well, good for Paul Bettany.
Like The Da Vinci Code.
Right.
And of course, you know, Jarvis. Everywhere Jarvis. And it's been criminal, frankly, that we have not seen Paul Bettany acting
right.
more than just his voice in the Marvel films. Because, I mean, seriously, go back and watch Knight's Tale.
He's good. Watch Knight's Tale. He's good as Geoffrey Chaucer.
Ah, oh, excited. That I am excited about. Tattooed street punk, social networking Lex Luthor does not rustle my jimmies in this life.
Did we talk about the two Quicksilver and Scarlet Witches?
I do not think that we did. I mean,
there were some screen caps that were sent around that were sent out of the X-Men.
Oh yes.
Of the X-Men version, the Days of Future Past version.
Right.
And they're really not good because they're children, and kind of like not even attractive children. Which makes me feel like a dick for saying, but...
Yeah. And, your kids are ugly.
And here's
sorry, Magneto.
Here's the thing that we've learned, and this is just Marvel being fucking brilliant. Call me a fanboy. This is just Marvel being brilliant. You think, oh, well, X-Men Days of Future Past is coming out before the Avengers, so they're gonna get to define who Wanda and Pietro are. Oh, no, 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 no. In the allegedly, spoiler alert, if you don't want to know this, this has to do with the upcoming Captain America movie. Okay, give me like 2 minutes and then...
Yeah.
Allegedly, in the post-credit scene for Captain America Winter Soldier, we will be introduced to Wanda and Pietro. For those playing at home, that movie comes out before X-Men Days of Future Past.
Yep.
It's like Marvel is playing Ultra Chess 3D.
Although in this case, it's also, you know, Marvel versus Fox.
Everybody else, essentially, is right. hitting themselves in the head with checkers.
Yeah.
Because Fox owns X-Men, they're going to keep cranking out these movies. Was not a big fan of the first X-Men movie. Speaking of someone who needs their own movie, fucking Emma Frost needs her own movie.
Yeah.
Emma Frost needs her own movie.
She is someone who has far more layers than her clothing would suggest. Just on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. But she gets up to some crazy ass shit.
Yes, she does. You know, I find that, and I hate, because I don't know if we're the only podcast on Earth that talks about women in comics as much as we do, but we do. Here's the flip side, because everyone's like women in comics, and you kind of get that look. Here's the flip side to what I want people to kind of understand. If you say, comics have sort of gone a little mainstream, and if I were to say to somebody, this is not true, but if I were to say to somebody, if they're like, oh, who's your favorite comic book character? If I were to say to somebody, oh, Emma Frost, they would look at me and go, oh, yeah, mine too. with that sort of tone of voice, which basically says that you like seeing cartoon boobies. Now, let's step back a couple of years and let's understand something. Now, I don't like the over-sexualization of women in comics at all. I'm on record as to not being a fan. I would like to point this out to everybody. At one point, and I think that point is rapidly disappearing in the rearview mirror, but at one point, if you were writing or drawing comic books and you were DC or Marvel, your female characters kind of had to have that little, you know, they kind of had to be sexualized because that's what everybody else was doing. Not the right thing, but that was the way of the world. And I say that only to say, don't discount characters like Emma Frost or I'm a really big fan of Power Girl. Don't discount characters like that based entirely on the fact that they have been portrayed as being overly sexualized, because a lot of the times their backstories, the stories they've been involved in, their overall characters are very good. They're just as good as anybody else's. That has never, in my mind, for most, especially major female comic characters, that has never been an issue. They've never been really shallow characters. They've just been way over-sexualized. I mean, you look at somebody like Jean Grey. Jean Grey has been around since literally, she was one of the original X-Men with Angel and Beast when he just looked like a kind of a small round dude. She's one of the original X-Men. She's been around that entire time. I would argue that no one has a more complex backstory and mental state than Jean Grey in some of the shit that's gone on. Oh, that's just crazy. The whole Phoenix thing and beyond that, the Dark Phoenix thing, just nuts.
Yeah. And so, the many different ways it has been told and the whole lineage of her and Scott and blah.
Don't discount these characters based entirely on the fact that they are normally portrayed like, you know what Emma Frost looks like. She's the white and it's usually looks like lingerie and you know what Power Girl looks like with the boob window. Everybody knows what these characters look like. Don't discount them as character. Try to see them try to look at them in a different way. That's all I would like.
You can still say the way that this was done and the culture in general that it reflects is a bad thing. The character itself can be a strong character if it did not have these features and facets. You can do better. You should do better.
Right. So just something to keep in mind. For anyone who gets that sort of thing. Because I mentioned Power Girl. I am actually a big Power Girl fan. I've mentioned Justice Society of America, which I think she's still on. I may be behind the times there. That's the original Flash in it. And like the original Wings on the Helmet Flash.
Yeah, if I really got into another character at this point, I would probably... Because I've been reading Red Sonja, the Gail Simone Red Sonja run, which was really good. I have been considering getting back the Carol Danvers Captain Marvel run. Not the previous Miss Marvel run, but the like the current Captain Marvel run. Because you had Carol Danvers was Miss Marvel with the Kree DNA, and she's been around for quite a while. Mm-hmm. She's also one that's had a very specific kind of, you know, semi-sexualized costume since early on, but also it kind of, you know, morphed over time. When they did the reboot for her to be straight Captain Marvel, she's doing some really badass stuff right now. Like ordering Captain America around because she outranks him. Because she's a full bird colonel.
Right.
And, you know, there's a lot of World War II elements. There's a whole lot of other stuff going on with her. She's a really interesting character that I may jump into the comics on and start reading those backstories. The other Miss Marvel, the new Miss Marvel, Kamala Khan, is... now out. Miss Marvel number one for her just hit this past week, and it's getting rave reviews.
Which you sort of expect. I like we're in this age of really kind of bringing things to another level, trying to make things a little different, and really trying to be inclusive, and I dig it. Some of the stuff I've seen of Kamala Khan has been really pretty cool. So
I think it's. I don't say it's entirely slanted towards a younger demographic.
It kind of, it is to a certain extent. I mean, the way it's portrayed, it's something you should check out if you're interested.
It's a really good art style. Mm-hmm. I really enjoy it.
It is pretty good. So we have a couple more minutes. There's something I did want to talk about. Not too long ago, I want to say 2 days ago or so, somewhere around in there, the gang from WizKids did an IAMA on Reddit. And in this IAMA, they announced that they would be making miniatures for D&D's line coming out with D&D Next.
Which is a return to now getting actual Wizards of the Coast licensed pre-painted D&D minis.
Right.
Which Wizards was doing.
Uh-huh.
And then they stopped making them. Yeah.
Right, they stopped. They pretty much stopped making them for 4th edition.
I think so. Like, they were making some in 4th edition, uh-huh, and then they just quit making them entirely.
Uh-huh.
And then when they quit making them, Paizo stepped up and said, hey, we'll make a bunch of pre-painted minis because you like stuff that Wizards gets rid of.
Right.
Because that's their demographic.
Right.
And now, I think WizKids does their line of minis too.
Yes.
So WizKids is the big winner here.
Yeah, so WizKids is going to pick up D&D as well as Pathfinder from everything. And the IMA is pretty good to just kind of take a read through. Of course, they talk a lot about HeroClix, which is their big thing.
Yeah, and these are not HeroClix minis.
No, these are regular. These are actual.
These are like traditional D&D minis. Yeah.
Right. So what you're picking up is... what they're picking up is essentially they're kind of doubling up on their Paizo stuff,
mm-hmm,
which is pretty interesting. Now here's the thing I don't really care for is the Pathfinder minis are really expensive. They're not as way back when the way that they were packaged, you could spend about $20 and you get the long box.
Yeah, and you get a bunch of random minis.
You get like 12 random minis. You don't really get that with Pathfinder. You either get, from what I've seen, you either get like one mini for about that same amount that's random, or you get minis that you can see, and there's usually four of them in the box, three or four of them in the box, and that's $20, which I don't
love.
Which is,
yeah. So... with minis, here's the kind of weird thing about minis. Mm. I didn't necessarily like the, you get a random number of minis in the box thing, because that was really annoying. You wound up buying a lot of them just because you had to.
Well, I think for me it was the number of minis you got.
Yes.
Because I'm looking through, because they say pretty specifically on the IAMA that it's going to be the packaging and what they're going to actually put out there is going to be based a lot on what they've been doing with Paizo.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you're looking at something like you get four minis, one large and three medium or small in one booster. That's like $20. $20 for four minis is ridiculous. Then you look at something like the minis. You can see the Red Dragon Evolved box set is three minis for $40.
And that's a medium, a large, and a huge, right? And
$40 is a book.
Yeah, that's pretty nuts.
$40 is a book.
Yeah.
I mean, I mean, $2 a mini? I would be good with $2 a mini. Maybe $4 for a large mini, maybe, or like $3 for a large mini, $5 for a, you know, going up like that. I understood when they produced Orcus, and Orcus was, you know, $60. It was a huge, it was more than a mini. It was something you could just put on your desk.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
I'm still saying they would do a lot better business if they would keep in mind what people actually need when it comes to minis.
Oh, yeah.
And it's not just, oh, here's a couple minis that I like because, you know, these are the characters I play all the time. You need like 20 goblins.
Right.
You need like 20 skeletons.
Exactly.
You need like 30 orcs or something.
Right,
like
right,
that.
Right, right.
You need to sell like a 10 pack of all these different kinds of orcs. You need that are semi, that are kind of mixed a little bit. You know, you've got like an orc with an axe and an orc with a sword or two and an orc with a staff, but you still have like an entire warband of orcs for 10 minis. You sell that sucker for like $25 and you'll sell them just hand over fist. Because that's what we use mostly. We need big numbers worth of goblins and big numbers of orcs.
And Paizo has kind of stepped up to do something like that. They have a set called the Builder Series, and they have one set that's called We Be Goblins.
Oh, yeah.
And you can buy, but you get one, you can buy them in packs. The packs come with one mini, and it's $3. But it's random. Now you can buy a whole case or a display, and you would get 24 packs, each pack containing one random mini, for $60.
That's just
$60 for 24 minis is ridiculous.
It really is. At this point, I mean, they are not entering a market that does not have competition. They're not the only game in town.
No, they're not.
Reaper is doing solid business. They had their big Kickstarter for their Bones line. Mm-hmm. And I would buy, you know, a pretty solid set of those for. And though with a Kickstarter, I think you got down to like 50 cents. 50 cents a mini at certain places. And they're not painted, granted. But especially if you're buying in bulk in certain cases, you're not really too big on whether or not your skeletons are all shaded and colored all pretty.
Right. These could be done more inexpensively than they are.
Yeah.
And I know they could be.
Yeah.
I mean, they just could be. We're talking $5 a mini. That's insane.
Yeah.
I mean, look at HeroClix. What do HeroClix cost? And well, HeroClix are huge.
Yeah, they're pretty large, and they have you know, other stuff going on with them. They have the clicky base, and they have, you know, actual rule sets for using them as more than just, you know, here's a 3D representation of my character on the table.
Right.
The fact that they're doing a Wizards line is kind of okay. I'm probably not going to buy any because I've got a big box of minis over here. Unless they come out with like something really cool and really specific, I probably wouldn't buy. Mm. What they are doing that is really interesting, though, is that they're doing a dogfighting game very similar to their Star Trek, I think it's Attack Wing series.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're doing a D&D Attack Wing series that is going to be dogfighting dragons. That sounds really interesting. Mm. As someone who's been playing the X-Wing miniatures game, you know, I haven't played a Star Trek Attack Wing, but I know people who have, and they're really impressed with it. So that is the kind of thing that I'm actually more interested in.
See, and I'm not really. That's just not something that I'm super into. But it's interesting that WizKids and D&D are getting back in bed together. Hopefully, I used to think that the way that D&D did minis was expensive, but having seen Pathfinder take over, and the way they've done minis, that's a lot of money. And when you're talking about a hobby that already costs $40 to $50 for a book, I'm gonna have to pass.
Yep.
You gotta do something for us. So there is one more thing that I wanted to talk about before we close up the podcast. Russell has the information over at a site that we frequent called InWorld. The guy that runs the site, Morris, who's a good guy, who's posted some of our stuff a couple times in the past, we're always really grateful, is doing a really interesting contest.
Yep, he did. InWorld did an adventure contest back with 3rd edition, and now with D&D Next around the corner, they're holding another adventure contest that's actually being judged by several industry professionals, including Paizo's Sean K. Reynolds, Kevin Timewatch Culp, and Keith, our favorite guy in the world, Eberron Baker.
Right.
So with the D&D Adventure Contest, you have to write an adventure that is based around several maps that they have listed on the site for you to use. The adventure is – it has to use one of the maps.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be about 7,500 words in length at the kind of the max end. It can be shorter. It uses, this is the interesting part, the current D&D Next playtest packet. The deadline to get it done and submitted is February 28th. And we'll have the link to the EN World page, but this is something that Wizards is absolutely down with, according to Morris, mm-hmm. and will provide, you know, once it's done, it'll be out there and available for anyone to grab from EN World. So that's going to give you quite a few solid adventures that you could look at as, you know, some kind of third party or even starter material for getting with games. And honestly, by the time that they get this stuff done and posted, it's going to be March or so, several months away from when D&D Next is supposed to officially launch. If you're playing with the rule set and you've gotten through Ghosts of Dragonspear Castle, or if you're kind of like us and you're, you know, kind of adapting your own stuff on the fly, but you want something that's more a little Next specific, this is a good resource to keep an eye on to get some adventures or some inspiration from. The winner of the contest, as chosen by the judges, is going to receive an original print copy of Ghost of Dragonspear Castle from Gen Con 2013. And Morris says that he will personally run around Gen Con this August and get the book signed by as many people on a list of people you request as he possibly can.
I have a feeling Morris could pull that off.
He makes a note, if Mike Merles hides from me, I can't promise I can hunt him down that hard.
I hear Mike Merles has a little ninja in him.
Yeah. So, that sounds like a pretty cool little prize from the community at EN World.
Mm-hmm.
And it's an opportunity to get adventures looked at by some pretty significant people in the industry.
Yeah.
So, I'm always in favor of, if you're making stuff, make stuff and send it to someone. Even if you wind up, you know, not really wanting to get into the freelance D&D game, if you just like writing adventures, this is a way that you could provide something to the community at EN World, which is also a pretty solid community too.
And the good thing about participating in contests like this is, at the end of the day, even if you never hear anything about the adventure that you sent in, you know what? You still have an adventure.
Yeah.
That you wrote.
And the maps are very solid maps. You can just go snag those maps and use them on your own as it is. There's a temple. There's an old tower.
Mm-hmm.
A volcano fortress that looks really interesting because it looks like there's a bridge over a range of lava as well as a platform in the middle of the lava. So good luck using that.
Which is nice.
Secret graveyard and a very nice side angle view cutaway of a haunted house, which is actually really damn.
That was the map I was actually going to mention. That's a good map.
It's done in the same way that I think Ravenloft's maps were originally done in.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of side aspect.
So yeah, I mean, if that's something you're into, even if it's not something you're into, give it a go, and you might dig it. But for now, that's all the time we've got. As always, our music is Outpro featuring Esset. Check them out on uhort.no. Check us out on Twitter. We are at GIRpodcast. You can also shoot us an email to GIRpodcast@gmail.com. For Russell, this is Jeremy. Thanks for listening.
If I see a HeroClix Lex Luthor that has a tattoo anywhere on it, we're done.